In the early morning hours of August 8, 2014, a woman's body would be found lying on the floor outside the Avalon apartment complex in the Australian city of the Gold Coast. It would later be revealed that the victim, a 26-year-old woman visiting from New Zealand, had fallen 14 floors to her death. This is the case of Aurina Wright. This is Katie, and you're listening to the Terrible Things podcast. Please note, this podcast contains themes that may be distressing for some people. Listener discretion is advised. Aurina Wright was born on the 20th of May, 1988, in the province of Bulacan in the Philippines, located directly north of the country's capital of Manila. When she was only a toddler, Aurina's mother, Mirzabeth, moved her and her younger sister, Mareza, to New Zealand. The family initially moved to Pōrurua, just 20 minutes north of the capital, Wellington, where they remained for the girls' primary school years. When the sisters graduated into high school, the family moved slightly south to the city of Lower Hutt in order to be closer to Wellington. Aurina and Mareza had, by all accounts, a relatively normal and happy childhood, and had developed a very close friendship by the time they reached adulthood. Mareza would describe Aurina as a beautiful, cheerful, and intelligent person, and said, quote, "She wasn't just my sister, she was my best friend." Standing at roughly 162 centimetres and weighing approximately 55 kilos, Aurina was described as a naturally beautiful woman. She had long, dark hair with a fringe that swept across her forehead, big brown eyes, and clear, tanned skin. But, as many women do, Aurina had insecurities about her appearance, with one friend saying, quote, "She felt like she wasn't mainstream beautiful." On the 29th of July, 2014, Aurina Wright boarded a plane to fly from New Zealand to the Gold Coast in the Australian state of Queensland. The Gold Coast is one of Australia's premier holiday destinations, famous for its white sandy beaches, great surf, theme parks, shopping, and vibrant nightlife. The main reason for Aurina's visit was to attend the wedding of a friend. However, she intended to enjoy every second of her two-week Australian vacation. On August the 1st, while swiping her way through Tinder, Aurina matched with a man named Gable Tosti. A match that would change the young adults' lives forever. Gable Tosti was a 30-year-old carpet layer living in surfer's paradise on the Gold Coast. Living the life of a bachelor, Tosti boasted on online forums about the number of women he had slept with, claiming that he had slept with over 180 women in the last 4 years. Gable kept a list containing names, dates and details of each encounter, and also had a strange habit of recording himself, writing in one forum, quote, "I have motion detection cameras in my house, call recording on my phone, and sometimes I even leave my phone on record in my pocket for nights out in case I forget what happens." Gable starts the Tinder conversation with Aurina by making his intentions abundantly clear. Quote, "You look delicious. I want to do dirty things to you." After almost a week of exchanging suggestive messages back and forth, the pair agree to meet up. On Thursday, August 7th, 2014, at 8:45 p.m, Aurina Wright and Gable Tosti meet at the Cavill Mall in Surfers Paradise. The first few moments of their encounter were captured on CCTV, with Gable, a large, muscular man standing at 188 centimetres tall, and weighing around 90 kilograms, reaching down to meet the petite Aurina in an awkward embrace. A few minutes later, the pair are again seen on CCTV at a local BWS bottle shop, where Gable can be seen purchasing a six-pack of beer. At 8:58 p.m, just shy of 15 minutes into their date, Gable and Aurina are seen entering Gable's building, the Avalon apartment complex. Gable lived in a stylish one-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment on the 14th floor of the building. The balcony off of his living room boasted brilliant views of the city and the river below. The pair settled in for the evening, quickly finishing off the six-pack of beers and moving on to Gable's home-stilled vodka, more commonly known as moonshine. According to Gable's account of the night, the pair drank, chatted, and engaged in consensual sex. For reasons still unknown, at 12:56 a.m. on August the 8th, Gable hits record on his Sony Xperia phone. At around 5 minutes into the recording, Warina can be heard declaring she is psycho drunk. However, Gable can be heard continuing to pour her drinks over the next couple of hours. Most of the conversation on the over 3 hour long recording is the regular rambling chat one would expect from two incredibly inebriated individuals. Conversations of God, life after death, and Greek mythology, among other things. However, at 1:35 a.m., around 30 minutes into the audio recording, the tone of the conversation shifts as Warina accuses Gable of hiding her mobile phone and other belongings. There has been speculation online that at the time, Gable was knowingly hiding Warina's phone in his pocket. However, this has never been confirmed. Gable tries to mediate the situation, asking Warina to calm down. He admits that he should never have given her so much to drink and offers to cook her some food, potentially in the hope that she would sober up a little. The conversation seems to mellow for a while. However, at 2:11 a.m, Warina can be heard throwing small, ornamental rocks at Gable. The coffee table decoration, now turned weapon, can be heard on the recording being thrown around the room, some hitting Gable and eliciting a verbal reaction. At one point, Gable can be heard saying, quote, "This is fucking bullshit. You are lucky I haven't thrown you off my balcony, you goddamn psycho little bitch.
You're lucky I haven't chucked you off my fucking balcony, you goddamn psycho little bitch."
The throwing of the rocks continues for a few moments until Gable loses his cool.
Goddamn psycho. I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna walk you out of this apartment. Just the way you are. You're not going to collect any belongings or anything, you're just going to walk out. And I'm going to slam the door on you. You understand? If you try to pull anything, I'll knock you out. I'll knock you the fuck out. Do you understand? Do you understand? Do you understand?
According to Gable, this is when Marina attempts to strike him in the head with a telescope clamp. It is then believed that Gable restrains Warina. Gurgling and choking sounds can be heard as Gable commands her to let go of the telescope clamp. Gasping for air, Warina can be heard trying to apologize. Next, the sound of the balcony door can be heard opening. Warina begins pleading with Gable, repeatedly screaming the word no, before begging, quote, "Just let me go home," over again and again. Gable is heard refusing this request, stating, "I would, but you've been a bad girl."
No! 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 You're leaving a home!
Gable carries Warina out to the balcony and returns inside, locking her out there. At 2:20 a.m, a faint scream can be heard. This is the sound of Warina Wright falling 14 stories to her death. Some conspiracies online have suggested that Gable left Warina hanging over the edge of the balcony. However, these stories are unsubstantiated. The official story is that Warina, fearing for her life and completely inebriated, climbed over the balcony railing in an attempt to escape Gable's wrath, expecting that she could simply drop to a lower floor. 38 seconds after the sound of Warina falling, Gable picks up his phone and makes a call. Not to the police, but to his lawyer. The phone call goes unanswered, and Gable can be heard swearing as he moves around his apartment, throwing on his clothes and searching for his keys. At this point, sirens can be heard in the background of the recording, as Gable's neighbour in the apartment directly below him had called for police and ambulance after she had witnessed Warina falling. Instead of checking on the situation developing outside the front of the Avalon Apartments, Gable slips out the back exit and wanders around aimlessly for around 45 minutes, Gable attempts to call Rena's phone twice during this time, but later he finds her phone in the pocket of his jeans. Gable then orders a slice of Supreme Pizza from a pizza place near the Cavill Mall. From here, he would have been able to see the blue and red flashing lights of police and ambulance services as they hovered around the badly broken body of Warina Wright, lying on the concrete. Reports stated that Warina's body was, quote, almost folded in half, with her head bent towards her trunk and a part of her jeans caught up in her skull fractures. The medical examiner later explained that it was difficult to attain her exact height, as her injuries were so severe. After eating his pizza, Gable made the following phone call to his father.
Hello, Dad. I might have a bit of a situation. See, I met up with a girl for a date tonight, and she started getting really aggressive. Like, I was all right at first, and, like, we, you know, had sex in bed, and then after that, like, she kept drinking, and we were both drinking, and she, like, I think she thought it was, like, a joke or something, but she kept, like, beating me up and whatever. Yeah, and it was because she was really drunk. And, like, I forced her out on the balcony, and I think she might have jumped off. Like, I've been walking around, and there's, like, a million cops around my building. I'm fucked. I don't know what to do.
Gable's father comes to pick him up, and the recording ends shortly after this. Gable and his father return to his father's home in a gated community. The following afternoon, Gable Tosti, accompanied by his lawyer, arrived at the Surfers Paradise police station to answer some questions. According to police, Gable chose to remain silent, as was his right. However, he did agree to comply with forensic testing. Within days, detectives seized Gable's mobile phones and discovered the audio recording of the fateful hours surrounding Rory's death. Upon analysing the recording, detectives came to the conclusion that, given Gable's rage that evening, Warina had feared for her life and had come to the conclusion that the safest way out of the situation was to risk climbing down the side of the building as a form of escape. Running with this theory, detectives arrested Gable Tosti for the murder of Warina Wright. During his time in prison, Gable Tosti apparently suffered violence at the hands of other inmates. However, his suffering wouldn't last long, as after only 3 months behind bars, he was released on bail, his family agreeing to a $200,000 surety bond. As part of his parole conditions, Gable was issued an alcohol ban, a complete ban on any social media that could be used to meet or communicate with women, random breath testing, and he was made to attend treatment for his alcohol abuse. Gable was also required to stay at his parents' home while out on bail, with a curfew of 6 p.m. In October of 2016, Gable Tosti's trial would commence. Gable pleaded not guilty to the charges of murder and manslaughter. The prosecutor argued that Warina had been so terrified of Gable and so terrified of what he would do if she was let back inside that she felt the only way out of the situation was to attempt to escape over the balcony. The defense countered this, saying that Gable was simply trying to defuse the situation when he relocated Warina to the balcony, and that Warina's response to the situation was, quote, unreasonable and blown out of proportion. Gable was never called to testify in his own defense and sat silently as he watched the proceedings unfold from his place in the dock. Presiding over the case, Justice John Byrne instructed the jury of 6 men and 6 women to consider several key factors when deciding the fate of Gable Tosti. The jury specifically needed to consider whether or not Gable's actions had left Warina in a position where she could have reasonably feared for her life. Gable could only be considered guilty of the murder charge if he could have, quote, reasonably foreseen that his actions would result in Warina's death. The jury were also told that Gable's actions following the death, specifically in wandering around and ordering pizza, were not relevant in deciding his guilt. Following 5.5 days of evidence and 4 days of deliberation, the jury were finally ready to reveal their verdicts. On the count of murder, Gable Tosti was found not guilty. On the count of manslaughter, Gable Tosti was again found not guilty. Gable Tosti, was officially a seaman. Gable's mother and father let out deep sighs, his mother crying in relief. Warina's mother sobbed softly into a tissue clutched tightly in her hand. Gable rocked back on his chair, suddenly at ease. Outside of the courthouse, Gable's lawyer told the press that his client was, quote, very happy with the result, and that he was, quote, looking forward to moving on with his life. Following his acquittal, Gable Tosti was interviewed on 60 Minutes, an Australian current affairs program, for which he was allegedly paid $250,000. Since this, Gable has changed his name to Eric Thomas and has been involved in numerous public Facebook arguments surrounding feminism and what the implications would be if the gender roles had been reversed in his and Marina's case. Gable, now known as Eric, has also since rejoined Tinder, Facebook, and other social media platforms. Warina Wright's family returned to New Zealand to grieve in private. A family spokesperson asked the media to respect their privacy as they grieve the loss of their daughter and sister.